Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 40 of the...
So we got bored during quarantine and we started a podcast.
Podcast. Welcome back. We are doing something special today. We have finally got round to watching a film and reviewing it.
You know what that means?
No.
No random word generator song.
No. No, there isn't.
I can't even do like a random movie generator song. That doesn't work either.
No, you don't have any songs prepared.
Oh, fine.
I'm afraid it will be a songless podcast today. We're reviewing the movie. So, drum roll please. You can do a drum roll. The movie we are reviewing is The Witches.
That was very...
It was anticlimactic,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah, because one, I had a pen and a finger.
You could have used the table. I mean, you used a notepad.
Okay, let's do it again.
What do you mean do it again? We've already revealed what it is. And the movie we are reviewing is The Witches.
By Roald Dahl.
That must have blown people's ears out. It went crazy red in the computer.
Oh, maybe we chop it.
No, we're not going to chop. We don't chop anything in this podcast.
No.
So, yes, we have... Actually, I'm gonna head in here. We've decided... Well, we said we were going to review a film at some point. We're going to try and do it every 10 episodes, we've decided. We're going to try... The next one will be for episode 50. We'll review another one. Now, there's a few reasons that I wanted to go for this film in particular. We spent a lot of yesterday procrastinating and watching film trailers as to which film would be a good option to review. Now, we went through... We looked at the worst rated films because they seem like fun. We tried to find the strangest films, but that was...
Really, really weird.
Like, disturbing weird.
Like, I think I'm gonna have nightmares after
we were thinking
weird.
Of, like, Sharknado, which was, you know, okay-ish, but then it just, when we put in strange films, like, the world's weirdest, strangest film, some real weird fucked up
shit. I would like to
comes.
Also add that Sharknado in Rotten Tomatoes has 76%, in our opinion, was too good.
We haven't seen it.
No, but, like, it would be too good for reviewing, but then...
Yes, that's true.
In the end, we did choose a movie that... we thought would be fun to watch as well. It had nothing to do with the Rotten Tomatoes anyway.
We decided we have to want to watch it too, because otherwise it's hours of our life we will not get back. But there was a few reasons that I wanted to go with The Witches. So The Witches is, to give you a brief recap, it's a book by Roald Dahl originally, considered dark fantasy for children. which I think is an apt description. And it has been... staged, I think the director was, I don't know if his first name is
Zemeckis?
Is Robert Zemeckis? I don't remember.
Yeah, I think so.
It's starring, this film in particular, starring Anne Hathaway, Octavia Spencer, with some voices by Kristen Chenoweth and Chris Rock, I believe, are in there too. Stanley Tucci is there, because he's in everything as, you know, a random Stanley Tucci character. and yeah, it came out last year. It was something that caught my eye when it came out in the trailer. And I like the idea of reviewing this movie because I thought that it is kind of, when we, you know, we talk about entertainment and art a lot, and I think that there is nothing, like, more intriguing than the adaptation of what could be considered classical literature.
Classical children's literature.
Well, this is an iconic children's author, is it not?
Yeah.
I mean, it depends, of course, where you are in the world, but Roald Dahl is a big name.
He's done The BFG, The Big Friendly Giant.
Big Friendly Giant. He's done Willy Wonka, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. He's in a lot of, you know, even other ones that have been adapted to film. James and the Giant Peach is another one. And one thing I really like about him is that it is kind of strange, because he does, it's some dark stuff. That goes on. I was a huge Roald Dahl.
It's not the typical. It's not Disney. Definitely not on the Disney brand. So it's kind of, I guess, in a sense, refreshing because it does has a different take on.
It's
on
not
the story.
It's not all happy clappy as Roald Dahl.
No, but there is a bit of a sense of like, well, you make the most of what you have. This is the situation we're in. This is kind of awkward, but life goes on and we deal with it.
Indeed, and. If before we even jump into our own opinions, the story of the witches is, the story of the witches in this film at least is that a young boy loses his parents, goes to live with his grandmother, and the grandmother has experience with witches. She knows when a witch is around, and this young boy meets a witch in a supermarket in the case of the film, and is asks his grandmother explains it, and they run away to a hotel together to try and escape. But all the witches are there for an annual kind of conference. The coven has got together. He wants to train his new pet mouse that his grandmother got him as a consolation gift, I guess, for the loss of his parents. And he happens to be in the room where the conference will happen when the witches walk in. And of course they can smell him because he showers regularly and he smells like poop for them. So he watches as one child gets turned into a mouse and then he gets turned into a mouse. And it's the story of how they are going to get back at these witches and stop these witches turning all the children into the world into mice. That is basically the premise of the story. Like we said, starring Octavia Spencer, Anne Hathaway, Stanley Tucci, and many other very good cast members. So, let's get it straight into it. 5 minutes in, what did you think?
I really enjoyed it. I'm always a huge fan of, you know, the visuals. So I enjoyed seeing, like, from, like, the pattern, the wallpaper patterns in the grandmother's house to her really colorful patterned dresses and her purses. They're all, like, knitted. Okay, I'm going into detail of this stuff. But, yeah, I'm just a huge fan of that. And it's also, it's meant to, it's set in the 1960s.
I don't know.
Yeah, because it's the 1960s. Yeah. So you kind of have that kind of aesthetic. But it's as usual, very colorful. And then the story, it's very suspenseful.
Yeah, you scream quite a lot at some of those scenes.
Yeah, there's a lot of like, oh my gosh, I almost caught, and you know, little mice, you know.
Versus the big witch.
Versus the big witch. And then like, all this like very character, like I was watching and I'm like, yes, I can see how this was made from a children's book. Because you have that, very particular details of when they describe the witches, like, oh, they have claws, they don't have hands, their feet, they don't have toes, and you see how they walk, because you know something you never think of, it's like, how would you walk
if you had no toes?
And it's like this, it almost looks like this prancing horse kind of pace kind of thing, all those details, like, I really enjoyed it. And yeah, I'm not going into more detail, but yeah, that's my
This is going well, this review so far, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess I'm getting a little nervous.
You shouldn't be nervous. I just love that the first thing you think of is the wallpaper patterns. This is such a Hamesy thing to say.
Yeah, well, I'm into the visuals and the costumes and stuff like that.
Well, it's like the scene in his grandmother's kitchen where he gets served the cornbread and you have yellow everywhere. There's yellow on the dresses, on the wallpaper. The cornbread is like an unnatural yellow. But it all looks, it's very colourful film. The visuals are very nice. I mean, very nice for the pretty parts, and then really proper creepy for
the
creepy parts. Okay. I mean, you haven't read the book, presumably,
no.
Have you not?
No, I've never read any of the Roald Dahl books, actually.
You're missing out. I was a huge fan of them growing up.
How old were you when you were introduced?
I don't remember. Well, I was still in England, so I was under the age of 11.
Okay,
because I've read all of them with the exception of his one, which is called Boy, which is his autobiography kind of. It's the only one I think I haven't read.
Okay,
and I read them all multiple times, and I had them on audiobooks.
Because something I always wonder is like, okay, now I'm an adult watching this, and sometimes I go like, oh my gosh, really? This is for kids? But I always wonder like, oh, what would have, you know, 8-year-old me have taken out of this? You know, would have I enjoyed it? And yeah, I mean, I didn't think it was that creepy.
You're only 8 years old. I think if you were 8 years old, you might have a different question.
Well, yeah. Well, I think I would have been screaming even more.
Yes, I think so.
And then the way they describe the witches, you're like, oh, that woman could be a witch. Or that woman could be a witch. Or that woman could be a witch. You know, like, yeah. Does she have toes? You know, I kind of imagine how after watching it as a kid, you'd be like, my teacher, who I despise, was likely a witch. Or yeah. Secretly hoping she is.
I think that's kind of half the joy of it. It has a lot of magic to it. The idea that, well, I guess in this case, any woman could be a witch by Roald Dahl's standards. And it does make you read it and go, I mean, anyone I dislike as a woman must probably be a witch.
Then. Yeah.
Well, it's good that, I mean, like, one of the things that's kind of interesting for me is that, you know, he is I'm going to call him a classical author, even though it's not the traditional version of classical. But one of the things that I remember distinctly from the books is they are I guess you'd call them illustrated. Mm-hmm. That they have illustrations regularly,
yeah,
but just like a normal paperback book. But they're illustrated by a guy called Quentin Blake. And he's a very distinct drawing style, which I was always, I remember looking back at them later on in life and I was like, how do these drawings, you know, not creep kids out? They're kind of quite jaggedy and kind of rough. They're simplistic kind of pen drawings.
Okay.
They're not majorly creepy, but they are at the same time kind of scary. And I was curious as to how they would, you know, Roald Dahl did all his career with the same illustrator. So all his books are the same version. And he has such an, I mean, there's no doubt that Roald Dahl had an incredible imagination because all of his stories are so fantastical. Like, so, like, so, you know, we're talking about a young boy who crawls into, grows this giant peach and then crawls in and lives in the core of this peach with all these different insects who are now human size and flies around the world. Yeah, that's one of the stories. You have him with like magical medicine and the witches. He's got some a cuckoo imagination. Even just Charlie and the Chocolate Factory and what happens to all those kids. And
but I can kind of see it as, I feel like it would be stuff that's along the lines of what a kid would imagine. I mean, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, the idea of a river of chocolate, that's every kid's dream.
Yeah, but like, I mean, yeah, it's true. Yeah, it is. I think he does a great job at, I think, appealing to any child. It's just a wonderful, magical, terrifying world. Because they are usually terrifying, and usually the parents have died in some unfortunate accident.
But if you think about it, well, kids love a good suspense. You know, it's something, it's like, I know I shouldn't be listening to the scary story my uncle's telling me or my older cousins are telling me, but I want to know. And then I'm scared. And then it's dark and I'm wondering if behind that door at night, which is just the bathroom door you always go to every night, might have a vampire or you're, it's like you're scared of it, but you want it.
Yeah, it's the right kind of scary.
And these stories, this story, at least, the witches, gives that.
It does. As for my own opinion, which you have yet to ask me.
Oh, sorry. I thought you would just automatically go to it.
Well, probably.
When I was kind of going mute, I would, you know.
You're waiting for it. You're supposed basically to ask me. This is how joint podcasting works. You're like, oh, that's so nice that you asked. Now, what do you think of it? You know, that kind of thing. So
you're the one with a clipboard.
I have a clipboard, but I have things for other unrelated. I didn't write any notes during the movie.
Me neither.
I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a really fun story. I think it's surprisingly close to the book.
Okay.
It does change a lot of things because it has it obviously uses a very different set of characters to the originals, which were, it was a white English boy and his grandmother's Norwegian. And here we have Octavia Spencer. So it's an African-American main cast members. But they were able to integrate the Norwegian thing. Anne Hathaway was Norwegian herself, which I think the witch was the Grand High Witch was also in the book. And they were able to make it into the hotel, and they were able to adapt it while still, I think, staying relatively true to the story. The only thing I don't remember is whether they had those smiles. They didn't have the cuts for sure.
Okay,
but I don't remember about the big smile. They did have the wigs would cause them they had all these like sores and warts and they had claw hands, like big claw hands, and they had no toes. But I really enjoyed it. I love the visuals. I thought the story was well told. It was fun to watch. It made me laugh and also kind of gasp at different moments. Overall, I thought it was a really fun film. But that brings us to the next part, which is another thing why it's interesting, is would you be surprised to hear that it didn't do terribly well?
Well, I'm not surprised just because I remember hearing that it was going to come out and then you didn't hear anything about it. For me, that's the telltale sign that, it flopped and nobody wants to talk about it anymore, and that's it.
Okay, well, let me read you some of these reviews and you can let me know what you think. So, we have here, first off, it was an average of 49% on Rotten Tomatoes.
All right.
So that's pretty low. Google's of the critics has given it 3.1 out of 5. Basically, always described as average at best. Here are some reviews for you to listen to. The Chicago Sun said that it was too disturbing for kids, but not edgy enough for adults. IndieWire said that it was dreadful. That Zemeckis it could have been made by anybody except anyone else, we've done a better job, and that Zemeckis has probably scarred a generation of kids for life. Then we have a few others here. Let's have a look. Here's one. Hathaway acts this flamboyant she-demon with the conviction that only a sensational actor can bring to a throwaway movie. We have some other ones. So we have colourful and faithful. The witches will surely enchant and frighten young viewers, though their parents might wish for more padding within the story. So those are just a few of the commentary. But generally speaking, like you said, it came out and then basically disappeared, which is a good sign that it wasn't popular. What do you think about those?
I think it shows a lot more about us as a generation of adults and what we think kids can watch. Because I mean, if you think about Bambi, the iconic Bambi that has you see the shooting of a mother, right?
Yeah.
I think maybe we want to protect our kids too much.
Oh, that's an interesting comment.
Because I think it is part of life. And I think if you had a super padded story of, you know, just as, oh, everything's good and nice and everything ends well, one, you'd in a way not connect with all the kids who have traumatic things that have happened to them as kids. And, you know, at least they have something to relate to with the main character.
Well, I think,
or with the challenges he encounters.
This might be a good point to also say that from what I saw, this film had a substantial amount of social commentary to it.
Yes, that is also true. Which I also enjoyed,
I think as an adult, that was really nice.
Yeah. At the beginning, when he's in his mom's, now passed away, mother's old room, like her grandmother's, and you see the brown dolls, you see a poster of Martin Luther King with John F. Kennedy, and I don't know who the third character was, but you know, all these little things that they're throwing at you, I'm like, yeah, this is what would have been important for a woman of color at that time.
Yeah.
The kind of music that was shown on the TV,
yeah,
they were all African-American artists, and you're like, yes, like, show, it's refreshing, one, from perspective of the viewer, it's like, oh, you get a glimpse into a different culture, right?
For us,
yeah. And also, I also made me wonder, I don't know if kids in the early 1960s, or I guess in this case would have been 1950s, because his mother, or 1940s, would she have even found a brown-faced doll?
Yeah, it looked like, one of them looked like a white one painted.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was looking at that, and I was like, it didn't look like... And I was wondering if it was done on purpose. Like, it looked distinctly fake. Like, it was very, very kind of tar colored, and there was a bit of red lip, not a huge amount, but like a bit.
Okay.
The one next to it had a lot. And I was wondering whether it could have been colored. And I wonder whether that was a thing. It was an interesting.
I could imagine that. Yeah.
An interesting
that
addition.
Makes sense.
I mean, that being said, you know, it also has. I thought a very simple and very beautiful story about grief, in many ways. You know, they don't do it in a way that is traumatic. But they do it, I think, in a way that young children could also understand. You know, it's a little boy who's lost his family, and he decides that he's obviously unhappy, but he didn't know how to express it, and he's not eating. And it's his grandma tries in different ways to cheer him up, and he points out that eventually they get there. But you know, it shows a few of these kind of missteps. You know, grandma also talks about, you know, that she didn't feel sorry for him, she feels sad for him.
Yeah. I thought that was interesting, and it kind of makes me think, like, yeah, what is exactly the difference between having someone feel bad for you and feel pity for you, right? And I'm still trying to figure that out, to be honest. Like, okay, how would I feel? How would I react differently if I knew that somebody was either reacting like, oh, I feel sorry for you, or I feel... or I feel bad for you, or I feel pity for you.
Well, I think that comes down to the grandmother's character, because she was trying... he describes her as being a stern woman with a kind heart.
Yeah.
And I think that was her way of making sure that he didn't allow self-pity to take over. I mean, it has things about, you know, that exactly, that they pick up... The witches pick on the poor and the colored of skin... the story of the hotel, kind of her being a black woman in the hotel.
The moment where she, you know, she gets out of the car and the bellboy just stares at her. And she's like, well, what are you waiting for? And then it hits him. It's like, oh, this lady's staying at the hotel. And then he felt, he felt proud, I think.
But he didn't want to take a tip.
He didn't want to take a tip from her. And you're like, yeah. And, you know, you kind of feel good about, you know, that showcase of camaraderie as well. Like, no, like, good on you, ma'am.
Indeed.
Also, the recognition that, you know, she got the tickets because thanks to his uncle who worked really hard.
And, that made, you know, it famous.
Made it famous. So kind of like all the, you know, that things that are famous and, you know, and posh also are probably have gotten there thanks on the backs of people who have worked hard.
Indeed. I think that I really enjoyed that social commentary that was added to it. I think it added an extra layer for us adults watching it,
yeah,
other than just the fun kind of story. It also added, I think, a lot to think about. And I think that, you know, Roald Dahl's part is the idea of life is not fair. I think that comes out a lot in his books. Okay. But this social commentary, I think, was added by the writers and the director and the actors who did a fantastic job on it. You know, one of the things I feel like we have to praise, I think I have to praise both the two main actresses in it, Octavia Spencer and
Anne Hathaway.
The kids were great as well. I must say, I really enjoyed the kids in it. But
then they were mice for most of the time.
They were a good chunk of the time, they were mice. Octavia Spencer, for me, I thought it was really interesting. I think it's the first time I've noticed, I think, an adult performing for children.
Okay.
Now, she felt to me, you know, Octavia Spencer is a fantastic actress.
With great gravitas.
With great gravitas. And yet she was a sort of, I mean, both of them were caricatures. They were just a little bit over the top. Kind of what we would do in improv to get across a point.
Yeah. You
know, we as adults get the subtlety of acting, but I think kids don't. And so for each of those emotions, they were just possibly a little bit too far, which I think is perfect for children, because you start to see it represented and you're like, okay, I understand that. So every time she was kind of, I guess, angry, she was a little more angry than I expected. When she was scared, she was a little bit more scared than I would have expected. Like, it was almost caricaturish. And done, I think, to a wonderful degree that it would make children understand acting in the same way that we do.
Yeah.
The level of it. And then Anne Hathaway, on the other hand, portrayed the Grand High Witch in the most flamboyant caricature of, I think, one of any character I've seen ever.
She was villainous to the bone. Like, she was villainous to the bone. There's no doubt about it.
No.
She expressed it.
She did. And I thought she did a great job, actually. At first, I wasn't convinced, but the more I watched it, the more... I guess also because I've seen Anne Hathaway as a normal human, as a normal actress in many normal films. And then for her to be so distinct and so kind of quirky, I was seeing her as Anne Hathaway playing the Grand High Witch.
Okay.
But I think if you saw her as a kid or as an adult never having seen Anne Hathaway,
it would be
a wonderful,
super entertaining,
incredibly entertaining. I mean, she does a great job at, I think, just making fun of herself in many ways, and also just being so wonderfully villainous, and yet a good amount of humor, a good amount of creepy, a good amount of, like, over the top in the right kind of way. Like, I really enjoyed her performance. I think she did a fantastic job being this, you know, very distinct character.
It's funny because at the beginning for me, I thought, I was like, oh, because I was like, okay, I picked up, now I understand that the accent's meant to be Norwegian, and you're kind of looking for the ooze kind of, but I do admit this Scandinavian accent I find quite hard to imitate.
There's two things here before you go on, because, you know, it wasn't just a Norwegian accent. First, she had to put on a Norwegian accent.
Yeah.
Secondly, it had to be cartoonish. So it was like a cartoonish Norwegian accent. And then thirdly, she also had to do the secondary voice where she was kind of the raspy witch. So she was doing a Norwegian accent in a raspy witch voice.
It's a lot of layers. Like, yeah, because I had mentioned it to you, and then you were like, yeah, but to put it into context, and it made me start thinking about it. I was like, okay, yeah, I guess it makes it. Like, I don't know how I would, you know, what a Norwegian witch who's absolutely villainously
cuckoo,
dramatic, you know.
Who's absolutely crazy.
How would she sound? Probably like this.
Yeah, I don't think it was the world's most perfect Norwegian accent, but I think if it had been, it wouldn't have fit. If that makes sense. Like, it was definitely an interpretation of...
Yeah.
She did a very good kind of cartoonish Scandinavian accent. And I think that fit fine. I know what you mean about the accent. You're kind of like, oh, that's not what I expected from Norwegian. But yeah. I mean, to be fair...
Sometimes it made me feel like it was Germanish.
Yeah, it did have that. Oh, Russians sometimes. You heard some influences. Yeah. But I couldn't critique her than that, because it still had that kind of villainous...
But then again, she's a grand high witch who was born, you know, somewhere in the tundra of Norway. Who knows how many millennia.
Yeah, true. And how long has she been living in the US? Because we know she's been there since grandma was a girl.
Yeah.
So there's all kinds of influence. Now, I guess, yeah, is there anyone else we should talk about who deserves a little bit of a mention in this? I mean, Stanley Tucci, we should mention that, well, first of all, I think the CGI on it was really good. I really enjoyed the effects. There was one thing, which was the scene where she's talking to Stanley Tucci on the balcony, the Grand High Witch.
Yeah.
Her mouth was all weird. I remember what she was doing, and it wasn't to Stanley Tucci, because he didn't know, did he? But, like, she kind of smiled, and it was kind of a bit all over the place. There's also a few moments where you could see her under her hair, you could see her hair under a wig, which I'm surprised no one picked up on. But I enjoyed Stanley Tucci in that as well. It was kind of like one of those, like, I guess it was the straight man characters, we'd call him in improv. And yet he was kind of very distinctly Stanley Tucci. And then he went kind of completely over the place when the rats took over, of course.
Yeah.
And then it was kind of weird seeing him kind of touching himself, but clearly no rat was there.
Yeah, you're like, I mean, you have to... That's up to the job, I guess, of the director, of kind of going like, this is what I want you to do. Imagine it's going this way, and hope that he explains it well to the CGI guys. Like, no, this is what you have to do.
Yeah.
And what actually ends up being being right. Yeah, I think this is a... I mean, we haven't watched Cats yet, but this is a good example of animals and humans being well melded. Cause
that was nice. The mice were cute.
They were mice. At the very, very end, when you see, slightly spoiler alert, older kitty mouse, I forget his name, already forgot the name of the main character.
I don't know if you noticed, but he was never named.
Oh, really?
He's called Boy, I think, in the books, and he's never named throughout.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. Because I realized I know Daisy, his little mouse, and then Bruno,
but the lead character is never named.
Oh, that's
it
funny.
Seems to be Boy and Grandmother, I think, in the book.
Okay. Well, Boy is, when he's an, I guess, older mouse, you do get a bit of the Chris Rock's lip.
Yeah.
But that was it. Then, you know, it was still mouse.
And then Anne Hathaway as the rat was...
Oh, gosh.
Was very distinctly Anne Hathaway as the Grand High Witch.
Yeah. Rat. But it was still clearly a rat.
Yeah.
There was no...
They had melded very nicely, let's put it that way. And yeah, overall, I just thought it was, I think, if you were to give kind of a final comment on the story and the film itself before we tackle one last topic, what do you think? Like, was it overall, I mean, for me, I'll start us off, like, I thought it was a thoroughly enjoyable movie. I would have a bit of questions about what age child should watch it. I think, you know, maybe not the younger you're of the younger age, but like, you know, I think preteens would be okay.
Eight would be the youngest.
Eight would be probably the youngest, because it is a bit creepy in places, but I think they could handle it.
I think
maybe it would be one of those ones that you watch in the middle of the afternoon and then you go to bed later.
Like, yeah, and maybe you watch it with them and talk to them. Remember, this is a movie, it's not real.
But overall, I thought great visuals, I thought great acting, I really enjoyed the story, I thought it was clear and easy to understand. For me, I would say that those reviews are highly overrated. Because for me, I thought that was I would give it a solid, I'm going to say 8.5 out of 10 would be my review.
Okay.
There's one more topic I want to talk about afterwards, but you go for yours first.
Okay. Well, I really enjoyed it. And I think if I wanted to say, oh no, the story was not good, or that it was over the top, the fact that I had, you know, set up right and kind of like edge to the edge of the sofa to watch it, I think that says everything. It dragged me in and I was into it. I was screaming. I got into the story. And I do love good, colorful movies. So
you do. Well, did you have anything else you wanted to add?
No, but if you gave it a number, I guess I should give it a number.
Well, you can give a number now and then we see if your number's the same afterwards. I don't think it's going to change, but it's an interesting topic to talk about.
Right. Okay. I'm trying not to be influenced by your number, But I think an eight.
An eight as well? Okay, eight and an 8.5. Well, there is one last thing that's worth talking about, which is that it caused, the only thing it became famous for was that it, there was a bit of a controversy about it, mm-hmm. which is that not long after the film had come out, there was a bunch of disability advocates, including Paralympian Amy Marin from Great Britain, mm-hmm. Who commented that the film was perpetuating bias against individuals with ectrodactyl, which is basically those who only have three fingers, who are born with three fingers. There's two missing. Now, there should be made here, and other limb differences, my apologies. There should be a comment made here, which is that the books have their hands involve five fingers. Oh. Five claw-like fingers. Now, Warner Brothers and Anne Hathaway apologized, and Anne Hathaway said that from now on she would be trying to make sure that, you know, she would know better for the next time. Warner Brothers apologized, saying it was a film about kindness and that it had been a different interpretation of the claw-like hands from Roald Dahl to make it slightly different from the books. I was wondering what you thought of that. It's hard, huh? I can start us off if you like. I've been thinking a lot about this because you've been thrown in the deep end here, and it's a difficult topic. I guess the question comes about whether it's, at what point do you say it's too much? We get a lot. There's a lot of commentary all the time. There's always someone who's unhappy. Yeah. I definitely understand where that comes from, and I understand that how. Yeah, I can't even imagine what it must be like to be a young child with a limb difference, thinking, oh my goodness, I'm only linked to the evil, the witches. It does make you think a little bit about it and going, okay, well, that's not ideal. Mm-hmm. I also accept that, you know, these are meant to be, and they do say in the film, they are mythical creatures. They are demons. Yeah. They're not meant to be humans. They're demons who have taken a human-like form. So I don't think we necessarily have anything that we could add to it, but I think it's good to add it out there. You know, at what point is it? It's a bit like the comment. It can also be a bit like the commentary on humor, whereby, oh, what can you not talk about, and this, that, and the other. And I think that's a very difficult.
Yeah, I mean, when you put it into the context of, oh, if you're a little child and you're watching, the audience for this, and you feel like you're being excluded, then I'm sorry, that's the case. It is a fictitious, very fictitious characters.
Yeah.
In any case, this has highlighted that there is this demographic, because I never knew about it.
And so I would not have thought of it. No. And I imagine that the director and most people in that film probably didn't think of it at all.
Yeah. So
you're thinking, I can also understand that, you know, from the point of, as for example, a writer or someone doing the visuals, that you're not necessarily thinking of them as people, you're thinking as of monsters.
Yeah.
Which I think also changes your perspective, because you don't associate putting human characteristics to monsters, even if they are pretending to be humans. But I think it leads to an interesting...
Because you could also say, well, this story is vilifying women in a way.
Yes, that's the other comment.
Right?
Yeah.
Witches. But I mean, they were demons who are hiding as women.
I think if you look hard enough, you'll always find something that would displease someone, unfortunately. And I was thinking the same thing. You know, if you thought about it, you know, there was not a single man that was vilified in that story at all. It was distinctly that, you know, only women can be witches, which I understand. The word witch is the female version of it. But
wizard and warlock do not have the same negative connotations as the word witch.
Yeah. I guess in a world where we're currently, that's very true, right? Yeah, wizard and warlock are seen as positives, but
they're
witches
like, oh, cool, you know?
Yeah.
Merlin.
Thank goodness for Hermione Granger, who saved that a little bit at least. But I think it's kind of interesting because it does bring the whole question about what we've discussed before, whether it's, you know, representation or how much of these things should you think about, where should we allow for a bit of flexibility in it. Personally for me, but I'm also not the demographic that would be offended by it.
Yeah.
You know, I would never have thought of that as being, especially because the fingers are then also very elongated and, you know, they're very distinct looking.
Yeah.
But I would, you know, I would be horrified if any young child with with one of these limb deformations was to feel targeted by that. Yeah, would be horrific.
Or that, you know, that he would get teased later on because, oh, you're like the witches, you know. Yeah. That would be horrible.
I would
cry inside, you know.
No, that would not be good. But yeah, I thought we should bring up that controversy because it was a big talking point of the film. Unfortunately, it was probably the only thing that got any. It was the only thing that got any traction on the film, which was a real shame because I do think that anyone who's not seen it is missing out.
In my opinion, all these, the people who vote on this are not children.
No.
And I feel like that's who this is for. I'm really curious what, you know, what the points are for many other children's stories.
A good question.
You know, maybe then we could see... If it had, there's a tendency of people kind of giving them lower points because
the story's not intricate enough.
It's not, yeah. And I'm like, it's for children. Like, the caricatureness of the character.
The caricatureness of the character.
You know, is what makes it fabulous for children, you know. We don't, no matter how much we try, we do start losing that filter. We start putting filters. We don't see things so unfiltered as children do. So,
no.
What they find entertaining is not what we find entertaining.
No, indeed. And I think that's kind of, that's why I also, the idea that critics would, I think, pan a film. Like, I think they were panning it for all the wrong reasons. Like, I was really like, okay, no, I mean, for kids, I could really see the appeal. I think my inner child in me was like, yes. Okay, well, we're coming to the...
I have a question, though, because I always wonder, like, okay, my fear is that with all this, like, oh, but you're making this people feel bad, that we would end up with so much filtering that we end up with the same
beige. I think we'll come back to the same problem. Because what happens is you'll end up with so much filtering that you won't have story. Like, the stories of minorities will be there, but there'll always be something that, like, you know, that it will come almost full circles, like, so you said, to all the color goes.
What would be a way to appease? Do you think would it have worked if, you know, we would have had a child or, you know, with the same problem or something? And then kind of to know, hey, it's not just the villains. There's also a nice little kid that has it.
And I think that one would be very hard. I think really for this one, it's kind of one of those ones that it missed a mark. Did it make a mistake? If it was a mistake, I think it was an honest one. That any malice intended in it. I think bigger problems are things like, you know, many of the primarily black casts being nominated for Oscars, that's not happening. Simply, you know, it's simply that there isn't, you know, seems to be primarily Caucasian films that make it to the Oscar nominations. Mm. I think this is one of those small, unfortunate ones.
Yeah.
Really, what the only thing they should have done really was to... If they'd had the forethought to be like, no, it's not a good idea, let's stick with the original description. You know, I think that probably wouldn't have come up if... I mean, I wonder, but I don't think that would have come up if Roald Dahl's original description involved them having only three fingers.
Then they would have been like, okay, well...
Then that's part of the original material, but this is like a change. Could that be seen as something negative? I don't know. That's my big concern, is that I think it's why you also don't see so many, I guess, different and intriguing films at the moment, is that you also... We are going through a phase in all entertainment and in all social activity, which is very much about diversity and integration, and that's a great thing. But there is definitely a part where if you can't accept that there are differences, there will always be cultural differences, not necessarily between ethnicities, but, you know, things that two different people, like, see differently, that clash is what makes good stories.
Yeah.
Difficult things make good stories. And I think that's something that should be, that's what we've been portraying over the years. Not always the right ones. You know, there are other stories that should be told. There are diverse stories from different groups experiencing different forms of problems. But I do fear for the fact that, you know, in the same way that I think humor is kind of slowly being killed by people's dislike of, you know, humor is very plainly the thin line between funny and offense. And it does trip over it sometimes too far. But I think that, you know, the whole point of a comedian is to make social commentary and to do it through jokes. And that does mean offending pretty much everyone in some form or fashion.
I think when you say it sometimes it trips over too far, I think it depends on who your audience is.
Yes, it's true.
Because many times, you know, a lot of the guy jokes, let's put it, because I can say that I'm not part of the demographic that's going to necessarily enjoy them a lot. I'm sure that lots of the guys are like, yeah, haha, it was funny. And many times the women will be like, well, that's just boring or, you know, over the top and offensive. And
well, it can be, yeah, exactly. It can be offensive. Or
it's to acknowledge that, one, not everything is liked by everyone.
Yeah.
So I guess you try to cover as many people as you can when you do entertainment. And that the things that kind of fall out, then, you know, we should have discussions about it. It shouldn't mean that you necessarily have to boycott things or that you it's like, oh, you're now in the bad books, period.
No, you know, I agree.
I think we need to get into the habit of, oh, this should create discussion.
That's what it should be doing, you know? And it's not, because what's happening is instead of creating discussion, it's
vilifying.
It's vilifying, and it stops all discussion in its tracks. And that's what scares me, because then what happens is you get different camps or different people thinking different things and not talking to each other. And then there's not a huge amount of hope for it. And I think that's where, you know, and that you can see also in these kind of things where, you know, one of the great things that has come of it is that conversation has at least been had.
Yeah.
You know, and that is a positive. And I think it would be an interesting conversation that you could have with someone at a dinner table one night. But like, hey, this happened, and you know, what do you think of it? But my fear is for both specifically for humor and for I'm trying to think of the right word for it. Not, I guess, representation in film and story, that we could end up creating camps that don't talk, and that's, you know, that's no good to anyone. Or that the stories become very beige and bland because we're not daring enough to tell them anymore for fear of being vilified ourselves.
Yeah.
And that you don't want. Anyway, we are well over time on this. I think we can leave you with that thought, you know, that discussion point. Let us know what you think. Have you seen The Witches? If you haven't, I would recommend it. And, you know, if you do watch it, let us know what you think. And let us know what you think about the controversy, about the acting, anything you like. Now, before we leave you, I think we should give this so we got bored during quarantine and we started a podcast rating. I think that should be based purely on our takeaway for how entertaining the film was. Because I think that's one thing that almost critics never discuss. They discuss story, they discuss visuals, they discuss this, that, and the other. But they never give you an overall rating for just how enjoyable, how entertaining that film was. So we're going to do the entertainment rating. And for me, I think I'm going to stick with my 8.5. I'm going to say it's an 8.5 on the entertaining ratio. And then you can give me your number, and then we'll average them out, and then we'll...
I would give it more. Like, I would have said, yeah, I'll give it a full 10, because I was riveted. I was on into it.
You're full 10? In that case, I think we're probably... Let's round it up to a 9.5. We're going to give it a 9.5 for our first film. I mean, it's going to be... The only problem with giving it a 9.5 for this first one is that to go higher...
Yeah. Well, the thing for me, it's like, it's either entertaining or it's not. No,
Okay. There's different levels of entertaining.
Yeah. The thing is, like, I was entertained through the visuals, the story, the
it was a good film.
Everything.
We go with 9.5. Let's do 9.5. So that's it. We have concluded that the So We Got Bored During Quarantine and We Started a Podcast gives The Witches by Roald Dahl, starring Anne Hathaway and Octavia Spencer and many other wonderful actors and actresses, an entertainment value of 9.5. So go ahead and watch it, is all I can say. And if you've enjoyed this, do let us know, because we'll be doing another one for our 50th episode. And Hamsey, of course, is going to tell you where you can find us on social media, even though she doesn't have her card here today.
Oh, you told them that I have a card where I have everything written. Well, you can find us on Facebook at Boredom in Quarantine. You can find us on Instagram at Boredom in Quarantine Podcast. Or you can send us an email at Boredom in Quarantine podcast@gmail.com.
Excellent stuff. You've heard the details. Let us know what you think of The Witches. Go watch it and let us know. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. If this has been your first time listening, awesome. If this has been your 62th time listening, even better. So we will see you in the next episode. We have been the
So We Got Bored During Quarantine and We Started a podcast
until soon.
Bye-bye.